gathered here in the mystery of this hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near. Spirit, draw near. There is a phrase that I've heard, probably many of us have heard, quite a lot over the last few years. Look at how far we've come. Look at how far we've come. There was a time when I wouldn't have dared tell anyone in any school that I was queer, and now there are over 4,000 gay straight alliances that we know are supporting the needs of LGBT students in high schools and colleges all over this country. Look at how far we've come. We used to look to Supreme Court cases like Bowers versus Hardwick to tell the story of what the legal system thought of us and our lives. That case that I remember reading about and studying about back when I was a lawyer suggested that there was no connection between family and marriage on the one hand, and, as the case quotes, homosexual activity on the other. But now, local and state governments all over the country are heeding the words of the 2013 U.S. Supreme Court decision in Windsor versus the United States, which says, what has been explained to this point should more than suffice to establish that the principal purpose and the necessary effect of this law are to demean those persons who are in lawful same-sex marriage. This requires this court to hold, as it now does, that DOMA is unconstitutional as a deprivation of the liberty of the person protected by the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. Look at how far we've come. There was a time when our society was so stuck on only recognizing and understanding two genders that many of us would never have thought to disclose our transgender or gender nonconforming identities in any public forum. But now folks like Laverne Cox, who's the first openly African-American trans woman to both produce and star in her own TV show, gets the cover of Time magazine, right? Phyllis Fry was sworn in as the first openly transgender identified judge in the nation. Diego Sanchez was the first trans man to hold a senior congressional staff position on Capitol Hill. And a dear friend of mine, Boston University's Episcopal chaplain, the Reverend Dr. Cameron Partridge, was the first openly transgender priest to preach at the historic Washington National Cathedral this time last year. Look at how far we've come. The month of June is this marvelous time where the tireless efforts of people of every gender identity and expression, sexual orientation, race and ethnicity, and all across the land, and our excitement about being able to step fully into the beauty of who we are, meet. When I joined MCC New York, Metropolitan Community Church of New York, I was very happy to learn that Pride Sunday was a high holy day in that church. We would dust off all of our special clergy garments, our leather and rainbow and trans flag stoles, and bear witness in the streets to the fact that we are loved, we are free, and we are called. So last Sunday was a rude awakening, to say the very least. In the words of my friend, Reverend Candace Simpson, in the last few days, we've been trying and failing to adequately process the attack of Pulse Nightclub. 49 beautiful people were stolen from us, and more than 50 were wounded and still recovering. This moment, she said, reminds most of us who have known this intimately that to be queer, to be brown and black, to be these things together and more, is to be constantly vulnerable. This world, Candace reminded us, is not kind. There are people who were here just a little over a week ago who are now our ancestors. 49 of them. Brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, friends, lovers, co-workers, couples. All gone. Country and folks all around the world. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people of every walk of life, the city of Orlando, the communities we call home, our own hearts stilled into mournful silence over the loss of so much life on a night that was supposed to be giving so much life. I don't know about you, but sadness and uncertainty and fear set in on me. Who am I supposed to be right now? How do I respond to this moment? Look at how far we've come, turned in an instant into what the heck is going on. After the tears came, my first inclination was to hide. Some of us know what I'm talking about. When things get really, really rough, just want to go someplace else. Shelter myself as much as I could from the pain and the heartache of this moment. I didn't watch any of the news coverage or videos that were surfacing on Facebook. I couldn't look at their faces because I knew it would break me more than my already broken heart could manage. It took me a whole day to get up the courage to call a friend in Orlando to make sure he was all right. Everything has felt unwieldy and uncertain, and for the better part of this week, I attempted to do what we humans sometimes can't help but do: rush my way through to the other side of uncertainty. I don't want to deal with this thing, so I'm going to make my way around it somehow. I was reminded of, in my reflections over the week, a book by Mark Nepo. Is anyone familiar with Mark Nepo? He's a really incredible writer, philosopher, educator. He wrote this book of daily devotions called The Book of Awakening, and he writes about this, the importance of waiting on and wading through uncertainty. The reflection I'm referring to is entitled Seeing into Darkness, and it begins with these words: fear gets its power from our not looking at either the fear or what we're afraid of. Nepo then makes this point by reminding us of that attic or closet door behind which something terrifying waited. Do you remember when you were a kid? There was always a door or a something that we just couldn't imagine going through because something awful was going to be on the other side. Did some of us, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Yeah, that. The longer we didn't look, this is certainly true for me. This may not have been true for anyone else in the room. But the longer I didn't look, the harder it was to open that door and confront what was inside. But Nepo goes on to say that one day, as he's describing his experience, he opened that attic door, having stood in front of it for a long, long time with little more than a pounding heart and a child's determination. Once he opened it, though, he stood at the threshold and nothing happened. And the more he inched his way in, and the longer he stood in the heart of the unknown, his breathing actually slowed and his eyes adjusted. Pretty soon, he said, he was able to explore that room and ultimately found a real treasure. He found pictures of his grandfather that he'd never seen. And this was the grandfather that folks said that he was most like. So by crossing that threshold, he was able to find something really miraculous and beautiful. He wouldn't have seen them had he not gone inside. Talking about and wrestling with things we can't make sense of is a lot like encountering those attic and closet doors. Active listening and attentively communicating through the realities of our experiences are sometimes even harder to navigate than the experiences themselves. Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm talking about? Sometimes the talking through it and the trying to make sense of it is actually harder and worse than the thing. I'm reminded of the process of disclosing to my parents that the person they'd called daughter was now their son, that I would now be a brother to my sisters and a nephew to my aunts and uncles. I knew that my story was important and valuable to me and to my family. I knew that my transition and experience as a trans person would change all of our lives. I knew that. But talking about it and sitting in the discomfort of that moment was scary and excruciatingly painful. And the longer I waited to talk with them, the harder it became to open my mouth and speak the words that I knew were true. As I move through the week and sit with folks who are managing their own grief, our own grief, collectively and individually, some of us are beginning to settle into the heart-wrenching discomfort of what's happened. And for some of us, we're giving ourselves however long we need to get our bearings. Allow our eyes to adjust. Allow our eyes time to adjust. And what I'm coming to understand in a whole new way right now is that we will never fully understand that which we have not been intentional about making room for. When we step into those sometimes hard places, when we loose ourselves of the fear of opening doors through which all of who we are and all that we carry can enter, we not only grow our own hearts, but we also set ourselves on a path to contributing to changing the world. It's about moving beyond speaking our intentions and into living our intentions. That's the difference. I make this distinction all the time, actually, in the Christian settings I call home, but it's equally relevant everywhere. It's one thing to say, for example, it's one thing to say what one believes and another thing entirely to do as though one actually believes it. Right? It's one thing to say, I love you. And another entirely to offer up that love in ways that are real, not just to the person saying I love you, but to the person who's receiving that love. It's one thing to talk about how horrific an act of violence and hatred the shooting was. And another thing entirely to sift through the rubble, figuratively and literally, of this moment. To understand what could be different in this country that might prevent Orlando from happening again. And what can I and we do to move us toward that different thing? Do you see the difference? There have been many communities of faith that have expressed outrage over what's happened. And some of those places, probably more than I care to count, are places where LGBT folks would not feel welcome. I sometimes get into trouble for saying this, but it's always worth saying, I think. Churches of any size or hue cannot call themselves welcoming and affirming if they are not continually learning and relearning how to make that a reality for the people who are in the pews and for the people who have not shown up yet. So what do we do with this moment? We breathe deeply. I noticed my breath was very shallow for days. Breathe deeply. Be real about the impact of this moment and all moments like this on you as individuals and as a community. Read the names of the beloved dead from Orlando. Read them aloud. I'm glad that's happening today. Both because some of their families chose not to claim their bodies upon finding out that their children were LGBT. And also, read and remember their names because this disproportionately affected the Latinx community, and it is both violence and erasure not to acknowledge that. Talk about this and be present for youth, because our communities, whether they're communities of faith or other communities, are full of LGBT youth, whether we know that about them or not, who need to know that there are adults who have their back. Talk about this with youth, because LGBT youth are 4 times more likely, and questioning youth are 3 times more likely to attempt suicide than their straight peers. Talk about this with youth, because nearly half of young transgender people have seriously thought about taking their lives, and 1/4 report having made a suicide attempt. And also continue to do intersectional justice work. Because, you know, members of the Latinx community who were present at Pulse and undocumented were interviewed by law enforcement and then turned over to immigration. The intersectional work matters. This is not an isolated issue or event. This affects so much and so many. Every word we speak matters. Every moment we stop to listen deeply or unabashedly ask questions matters. In a recent interview, Nepo said that the real value of listening is that it leads us outside of ourselves and eventually back into who we are. Every ounce of discomfort we may feel in an opportunity to open doors and our hearts with greater intention matters. You see, holy interruptions are most impacting not because they've interrupted what we think the natural course of things is. Holy interruptions are what they are because they're holy. Sacred opportunities to change us and the world for the better. Our charge today and every day is to embrace these moments when they come and trust in the power of our love for ourselves and each other to see us through. The time is now. There is much mourning to be had and much grieving to go through and much uncertainty to wade through. And it is possible that we can do it together. Amen. Ashe, and blessed be.